We are rapidly, I guess, moving through Genesis. Now, Genesis has 50 chapters in it, and we started some year and a half or so ago, I guess. The way to clarify us on that. But anyway, including today, we have 5 chapters left. I'll be sad, because I've learned so much from Genesis, and I can see so much relevance from the book of Genesis, even in my daily life. I see so much relevance in the book of Genesis. And I have seen various backgrounds for doctrines that are of the Christian faith in the book of Genesis. This is an absolutely amazing book. I'm so sorry, if I can be sorry for anything, is that I didn't understand it as well as I think I do now, some years ago. I wish I could have understood it more fully some years ago. But what that has motivated me to do, and because I do understand some of it now, to keep studying it. So you may do the same as we finish it, chapter 50. I would encourage you to keep reading it. Start all over again and go back through it again. Because usually when I read again, I understand more and understand better than I did before. So as I was thinking about this chapter 46, there's a lot of background to it. And especially the end of chapter 44, where Judah gave, in my opinion, a very impassioned speech to Joseph concerning the relationship between Jacob and Benjamin. To me, that was a very impassioned speech. And so the question is, how did Joseph respond? I'm trying to shorten this a little bit. How did Joseph respond to Judah's speech? I'm asking a question now. How did Joseph respond to Judah's speech? Let's think about the end of chapter 44, and then we bridge into chapter 45. How did Joseph respond to that speech? We saw that he didn't interrupt him. We hear nothing of Joseph as Judah speaks from, I think, verse 18 through 34, somewhere in there. Joseph said nothing. I mean, he's the prime minister, governor, ruler of Egypt. He just listened the whole time. But how did he respond? Overwhelming emotion. He responded with overwhelming emotion. Why do you think he responded with such emotion?
It seems brothers have changed so much.
It seems like his brothers had changed so much. And I think he was looking at Judah as kind of the representative of all of them, and what had happened to him, he considered perhaps to have happened to the rest of them. And how was that shown in Judah's speech? How do you think that was shown in Judah's speech? Anyone can respond.
His concern for his father.
His concern for his father. If you recall, I'm sure you do, that Jacob favored who? Joseph. And because who was Joseph's mother?
Rachel.
And who did we're going to get all the J's mixed up here. Who did Jacob love the most?
Rachel.
And also, what other son did Rachel have?
Benjamin.
So that was his whole blood brother. All of them were his brothers, but that was his full-blooded brother. And he hadn't seen him in, 22 years, I think it was. And so he was so overwhelmingly overcome with emotion because he loved Jacob, Joseph did, and he also loved Benjamin. And also, Rachel, how did Rachel die? In childbirth, bearing who?
Benjamin.
So there was so much to be emotional about, and he hadn't seen any of them. Well, he hadn't seen any of them in how many years? 22 years. Yes, sir.
I think another thing, too, is just the timing on this milk, because he had been testing his brothers to see where they were. What was their spirit all about? And I'm sure he was contemplating, Which way am I going to respond to them? If they are not going to be following God, how do I respond to them? If they've been changed by God, what am I going to say? Mm-hmm. And he didn't know what the response was going to be until this point right here that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's just overcome with emotion that, that he's going to be able to help fulfill in the Abrahamic covenant and be a part of the deliverance of the remnant of Israel.
That's right.
It's just amazing the timing of it. And it all came to the culmination right here. And he was able to say, not what you all did, but God.
Yeah.
What God did.
Exactly.
Oh, man.
So he was, it's really amazing. He was just so overcome that he actually wanted the Egyptians to be removed for a while. In other words, he did not want to restrain or refrain his emotions. He wanted the full brunt of his emotions to come forth and be expressed there. So he had them to be removed while he was being reconciled to his brothers. That was quite a scene to be reconciled. Reconciliation is quite a scene. I was thinking, in fact, my wife and I were talking yesterday, and it's amazing in families especially, where there's so many families, there's animosity, there's hostility, there's separation between close relatives and families. In fact, we have that in our own family. We have people that who may be the aunt of a niece or brother or sister, brother of a sister or whatever the case might be. They don't speak to each other. This is absolutely incredible. And then when you read something like this, this went on for a while, but this, and also it shows the power of God in reconciliation. And it's a challenge sometimes to try to help people understand that. God is a God of reconciliation.
Yes.
That's why we are here today. That's why we're not fighting each other. That's why we're here today. And I love the scene of this room today because of reconciliation.
Yeah.
God has reconciled us. Yeah. He reconciled us in two ways. He reconciled us to himself through Christ's death, and he reconciled us to each other through Christ's death.
Right.
That is absolutely amazing. Reconciliation. The barriers are gone. They've been broken down, and there's peace now. We can love each other. We can communicate with each other. He made us brothers and sisters in Christ. So this was just absolutely amazing what happened here. But I don't want to spend too much more time on this, but I just want to look at our key verse. And I believe the key verse in chapter 46 is verse 3. And I wrote it down here at the top of the page. He said, that is, God said to Judah.
Huh?
To whom?
Jacob.
God said to Jacob, I am God. What a statement that is. And if that's not enough, he says the God of your father. Now, who was Jacob's father?
Isaac.
And who was the father of Isaac?
Abraham.
So what are we getting into here? The Abrahamic covenant. There's a relationship here. There's not only a relationship between you and me, but there's a relationship between your ancestors and me, and we have an agreement. I've made a covenant with them. So what he's really saying here is that I am with you. I am with you, and I will be with you because I'm going to accomplish something through you. But just think about this. I am God. I think that has greater meaning when we know who God is, right? For example, what do we know about God first?
Holy.
He's holy. But what do we know about him even before that? What's the first verse in the Bible?
In
the beginning, what? God did what?
Created.
God is the creator. He brought everything that we see, everything we don't see, everything that exists. He brought it into existence from what? Out of what?
Nothing.
Just think about that for a little bit. Everything that we see, everything that we use, we're using something that already exists. We can transform it, we can change it, we can make it into magnificent things, but it already exists. God went back further than that. He brought it into existence first. That's amazing. That is absolutely amazing to think that there's a being who can bring something into existence out of something that didn't exist before he brought it into existence. This is some deep thinking right here. This is what I get up and do every morning. Every morning I think about God as creator first, redeemer,
and so forth, provider and all, and sustainer and keeper, and all of these things. I am God, the God of your father, and I love this. Do not be afraid. Isn't that amazing? What's the implication there? What's the implication regarding Jacob? He must have been what?
Scared.
Afraid. We're going to get into scared. He was scared to death. But we're going to get into this a little bit more. Do not be afraid. And this is the way God comes, whether it's an angel he's sending or him, or however it might be. A lot of times he appears to people, and however he appears to them, he says, do not be afraid. Isn't that comforting? Isn't that encouraging? Because there may be some tension in your mind regarding whether I should do this or not.
Yeah.
And so God is saying, do not be afraid.
And he did the same thing with Abraham and Isaac about the fear part.
Yeah.
Do not fear.
I'm with you. He says, do not be afraid to go down to Egypt. I don't want to talk too much about this right now because we'll get into it in a minute. For I will make you a great nation there. The word there is a key word here. I will make you a great nation there. Where?
In Egypt.
Egypt. Did God promise Abraham Egypt?
No.
That says something about God, right? That God is not a localized deity. God is a global God. God is in his full essence everywhere at the same time. He can perform whatever he wants to perform wherever it is or wherever you are. He's there. It's absolutely amazing. So that's just one verse. I think the chapter theme is Jacob, I left the apostrophe yes on there, because I was thinking one way and then I wrote that way and then I rethought. Jacob relocates to Goshen in Egypt under God's watchful care and Joseph's hospitable provisions to become a great nation by God's faithfulness there. That's the overall theme, I believe, of this chapter. Now, the overall theme of the Bible, as Pastor Pennington has been teaching us, is that God is redeeming a people by his Son, for his Son, to his own glory. And, of course, God's providence. But I just want to recap a little bit the previous two chapters, just some excerpts from both of them. So I wrote this down so that I won't read it for the most part, but I want to set the stage to where we are now. It says, during our time together last week, we learned that Joseph finally identified himself or made himself known to his brothers. Remember that?
Yes.
This self-identification of Joseph came after Judah made his passionate speech to him regarding how closely Jacob's life was intertwined with the life of his son Benjamin. And that's what he was speaking primarily on, how connected Jacob was to Benjamin, and if something happened to Benjamin, how it would affect his father, Jacob. Of course, his brothers didn't know that who Joseph was at the time, and nor did they know that Jacob was his father at that time. So during our time together last week, this was during the second visit that the sons of Jacob had come to Joseph to buy grain. During this second journey, Benjamin, that is Joseph's younger brother, was with them. You remember that Joseph said, if you don't bring your younger brother down here, you won't see my face. And Jacob had already said he will not go down. But at the same time, they were in need of what?
Food.
They were in need of grain. So sometimes your thinking may change a little bit, depending on your circumstances. So finally, Jacob acquiesced and let Benjamin go. Now keep in mind, was a Simeon. Simeon was already down in Egypt being held.
Yeah.
Then Joseph was, as far as Jacob knew, Joseph was dead. So now I got Simeon being held. Now I may lose my third one. I may have both Joseph and Benjamin gone along with Simeon as well.
Mel?
Yes?
Speaking to God saying, don't be afraid to go to Egypt, for I will make you a great nation there, that you were talking about, most religions of the world thinks that if you go a certain place, you get out from under God's view, so that you can do what you want over there because God's not watching. It's just when you're back here, God's watching. So I think that this is probably part of the thinking of Jacob, is if I go there, I'm out from God because I'm not here.
He's learning a little bit more about God. And that's one of the reasons we read the Bible. Each time we read the Bible, if we studied carefully, we learned a little bit more about the greatness of God. That's our goal. We read stories and different things and what God's works and so forth. But in the end, we're learning more about His magnificence, His majesty, His greatness, His holiness. Because holiness can be used in two different ways. It has to do with His majesty and His greatness.
Milt, I think a lot of times we forget about Satan and what his play in all this stuff is. Because he's always trying to upper hand God one way or another.
Right.
If this event hadn't occurred, just like you said, and I'm going to make a great nation out of you in Egypt, if those boys had not have stayed together somehow, they would have got where they were and they would have split off everywhere and there wouldn't have been a famine. But God got them back just at the perfect time, in His perfect timing, and Satan loses again. So if this event didn't happen, then there wouldn't have been hardly anything left for the nation of Israel.
Yeah, God.
They just split off, every one of them.
Yeah, God is supervising every event that relates to His purposes and His promises. He will do it. All right, so during the second visit, that's when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And Joseph didn't want Benjamin to leave him. Joseph did not want Benjamin to leave him. Keep that in mind. And that's why Judah was making such a passionate plea. You see the connection here. Judah was making this passionate plea because Joseph wanted to keep Benjamin. But Judah had already made a promise to Jacob, his father, that I will be surety for him, that I will bring him back. He wanted to send the other brothers back, that is, Joseph, to Jacob with the grain, but he wanted to keep Benjamin in Egypt with him because of the affection that they had for each other. He wanted to keep him there. But Judah had promised his father, I was a little ahead of myself, that he would be surety for Benjamin. Now, there's some verses that I would like to read. I'm not sure how much I should read because of time, but I want to read verses 30 through 34 of chapter 44. So turn there quickly. Let me read briefly. This is part of Judah's speech to Joseph. Look at verse 30 of chapter 44. He says, "Now therefore, when I come to your servant, my father," this is Judah talking to Joseph, "and the lad is not with us, since his life is bound up in the lad's life." You see the closeness between Jacob and Benjamin here? Jacob's life seemed to be so bound up in Benjamin's life that if he didn't see him again, it would be terrible for him. When he sees that the lad, verse 31, is not with us, he, Jacob, will die. That's pretty passionate right there. "Thus your servants will bring the gray hair of your servant our father down to Sheol in sorrow." We may have heard that before, right? Concerning whom? Joseph. You know that? For your servant became surety for the lad to my father, saying, "If I do not bring him back to you, then let me bear the blame before my father forever. Now therefore, please let your servant remain instead of the lad, a slave to my lord, and let the lad go up with my brothers." You see this great doctrine of substitution here? Take me in his place instead of him. "For how shall I go up to my father if the lad is not with me? For fear that I'll see the evil that will overtake my father." It's interesting here. What is he calling Benjamin?
A lad.
A lad. Do you think Benjamin is a lad at this point?
I think he's grown.
We will see later on, even in this chapter, that Benjamin has quite a few kids. He has quite a few kids. In fact, Benjamin may have more kids than any of the rest of them. I don't know how many wives he had, how many twins he had, or what the case may be. But there's a list here of a lot of kids that Benjamin had. But he's calling him lad. Why do you think so?
Because he
Because the baby's always the baby.
The baby's the baby, and the affection for the baby.
You're always the baby.
I remember my next to youngest brother was a baby, was the baby of the family for quite some time. And then some years later, another child was born. It was a challenge for me to consider the younger one the baby now, because I'd gotten so attached to Lannis, Chief, being a baby, that it's hard for me to say, to accept Trev as a baby. That's the youngest, that's the baby. It's, so that could be some attachment there. So I think that may be what's going on here. How did, we already talked about how Joseph responded to Jacob's, I mean to Judah's passionate speech. Now, following an emotional breakdown, this is Joseph's response. Joseph finally reveals his identity to his baffled brothers and where they stumbled. After they realize that the governor of Egypt, that is Joseph, is the one that they sold into slavery some two decades earlier, he rushes to tell them that he does not hold them responsible. This is absolutely amazing. I think we see the Spirit of God, the power of God working in Joseph here. And not only that, God's providence and God's eternal plan and purpose for doing all of this. We have to keep in mind that this is not something just happening here. God is behind all of this. God is orchestrating all of these events here. The same is true in your life, in my life as well. God is orchestrating. When we belong to Him, He's the one who's behind it. Now notice this here. I think this is really important. Joseph wanted his brothers to fully realize that there was more going on here than mere human activity that may have been motivated by jealousy, hatred, etc. He wanted them, that is, Joseph wanted his brothers to understand that there was divine purpose involved even in the midst of evil intent. Think about what happens in our lives. Think about some of the things that happen to us. They could be evil. You think God is nowhere? God is somewhere. He may not be necessarily behind the evil, but He's behind everything that's happened to you and to me. Why? We belong to Him. We are His. And He's working His plan out in and through us. And He will accomplish it, as we will see later on.
And it's for our good.
It's for our good.
The evil is for our good.
Yeah, for His greater glory. There are some verses here. Notice, I want us to see this. Brother Mike taught on this last time and did an excellent job. Just to bring us up, I want us to just see these verses or hear them read again. Look at chapter 45, verse 5. Notice, this is now when, this is after Joseph is identifying himself. And if you notice, Joseph identified himself in phases. He kind of fleshed it out a little bit. I think the kicker was that the one you sold into slavery. You remember that? But notice what he's saying here. You want to come closer, verse 5? Now, do not be grieved. In other words, don't be sad or angry. Don't be mad with yourselves because you sold me here. Do you see that? What's going on here? He's speaking to him. Joseph is speaking to them in kindness. Don't be grieved. Don't be overcome with sadness. Don't be mad that you did this, although it was evil. But don't be mad that you did it. Why? Listen to the next part. For God, you see that? Sent me before you to preserve life. So what he's letting them know that God is involved with this. It's more than human activity. It's divine activity undergirding this that's taking place here. And then verse 7. For God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant in the earth, and to keep you alive by a great deliverance. Verse 8, now therefore, it was not you who sent me here. That's probably challenging for these brothers. They thought probably that they had everything to do with this. They didn't understand the divine aspect that was taking place behind this, and the divine purposes that were actually being fulfilled. That you do not, it was not you who sent me here, but God. And he has made me a father to Pharaoh. What does that mean?
He's in charge of Pharaoh.
He's in charge. He's give God counsel and wisdom and guidance to him. And the Lord of his household and ruler over all the land of Egypt. What a statement. So he's letting them know that God is the one that we're to be looking to and not for to ourselves. God's going to take care of this. In his own way, God had arranged for Joseph's enslavement. Now, we wouldn't have thought that, would we? This is further revelation. In his own way, God had arranged for Joseph's enslavement. I think there's a lesson there. You know, we think about it. We think about what's happening to us. We wonder, why is this happening to me? Why is this happening to me? It may be something that God is doing, and that God has accomplished something through that activity, even though it's not something that you prefer to be happening to you. One thing I've learned about Joseph, and I think it's very important, is that Joseph, based on all the situations that he was in, not of his doing, own doing, Joseph accepted God's providence. Do you see that flowing through all? Think about when Joseph was first sold into Egypt.
Yeah.
What had he done? When Joseph was doing the will of Potiphar, his master, in the house, when Potiphar's wife came to him to seduce him, what did Joseph do? He ran. He fled.
Escaped.
He escaped. And then later on, he was put in prison. And then he interpreted the dreams and all these things. He left in prison 2 years after the cupbearer got out and so forth. Joseph accepted the providence of God. That's not always easy to do, but he accepted it. And that's what we have to do, because the providence of God is always playing out in all of our situations.
It's easy to accept the good providence, but the bitter is hard.
It's hard to accept. Yes, it is. It's playing out. But God is doing something. Never think that God is not doing something. So, that was even for this famine and the preservation of the people. God was putting Joseph into place to be able to use him to preserve this. That was all part of that. So we didn't know about it. With Pharaoh's enthusiastic support, Joseph arranged for his brothers to return to Canaan, pick up Jacob and all they owned, and come back to settle in Egypt.
Amen. 4-6.
Joseph wanted his people near him. Isn't that amazing? Think about that. Sold him there as an evil act, but now he wants them near him. That's reconciliation. So you've been reconciled. So now that carries us into our chapter. So finally we get to our chapter. But I just wanted to just reestablish that background. So let's turn to chapter 46. But before we turn to that, we'll be there anyway. Joseph sent them away. And there's some important information right at the end of 45 that I think we would just want to review again. When the sons made it known to Jacob that his son Joseph was still alive. But he was stunned. That is Jacob. Jacob was stunned. He was speechless. When I was looking this up, it said the word stunned could mean numb. It could mean his heart almost failed him. This is a state of shock. It could mean that Jacob's heart stood still. I don't know if we have any medical people in here or not, but heart's standing still. Your heart's supposed to be doing something. Standing still. It could mean that Jacob's heart, it could mean that his heart became weak. He couldn't believe what he had heard. But anyway, now let's go on. So now he finally was convinced because he saw the wagons and he heard the words of Joseph, the following two verses. So now let's move on. What's interesting also, Pharaoh got in on this and he was pleased that Joseph was doing this. And he made it kind of convenient for them to come down. He provided wagons.
Yeah.
The wagon is probably not the smoothest transportation today, but it would have been at that time versus a camel or a donkey or something like that. So now let's go to chapter 46. And I divided it up a little bit. Roman numeral 1 on the outline, it says, Jacob's divinely approved relocation from Canaan to Egypt with full assurance of God's presence with him. And Jacob was very eager to move. At this point, after he finally agreed to move, he was very eager to move. Why do you think so?
He wanted to see Joseph.
He wanted to see Joseph. That's exactly right. Now he has an opportunity to see someone, one of his favorite sons, that he thought was, what did he think the state of Joseph was for the last 22 years? Dead. Now he's learned that he's alive, and now he has a chance to see him. And not only that, he's been hospitably invited by his son Joseph and had the full approval of the Pharaoh. I mean, how could he not go now? So he's getting ready to go, but I think there's still a tension there. Do you see a tension here? Let's look at it. He says, so Israel, verse 1, set out with all that he had. Set out from where? Where was he at the time? He was in Canaan, but what area? Let's just say Hebron. He's probably in Hebron at the time, and he came to where?
Beersheba.
What do we know about Beersheba? This is a quiz. What do we know about Beersheba? Yeah, Beersheba was a very famous place, a popular place to all the patriarchs.
Yes.
It was popular to Abraham. It was popular, popular to Isaac. Example, I got verses written down here. Abraham, Genesis 21:33. Isaac lived there, 26:23-25. Jacob lived there too. You know, when Jacob left Canaan, Jacob had left Canaan before to go to where? Paddan Aram or Haran.
Yeah.
Where did he leave from?
Beersheba.
And he went to Bethel, and God appeared, the Lord appeared to him. So it was a very popular place. So he went there, and his ancestors had worshiped God there. So what did he do there?
Offered sacrifices.
He offered sacrifices. Right. So this could have been, there could have been some tension here, because how old was Jacob at the time? 130. He was 130 years old, and it's not always easy for an older man to move, right? And also, had God promised Abraham Egypt? No. Jacob was pretty settled in Canaan at this time. I mean, he had a lot of possessions. He had a lot of sons and servants and so forth. He was pretty settled there. So now, all of a sudden, he's going to move. That's not easy.
Yeah,
I have witnesses. He's not. That's not easy to do, and he has a lot of belongings that he has to pack up. Even though he does have wagons to carry the little ones in, and some of his possessions in, and so forth, but it's still a major effort on his part to do that. So I think there was some tension there. So what did he do? He went and sacrificed to God. He worshipped the God of his father. Verse 1 it says,
yes.
His father Isaac. So he worshipped him, and that was a good thing. Sometimes fear, I think this was a fear-driven worship. That's not bad. That's not bad. So there was a fear-driven worship. And so notice what happened in verse 2. God spoke to Israel in visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. I love that. God knew Jacob by name. He knew Abraham and Isaac by name. He knows you by name. You're not just a person out there somewhere or among a group of people. God knows you personally if you belong to him. That's so encouraging. He goes on to say, and he said, that is Jacob, here I am. And then God said, I am God, the God of your fathers. We're already talking about this a little bit. And he says that, don't be afraid to go down to Egypt. So this is now divine confirmation of this relocation by Jacob and all of his belongings now to Egypt. He's good to go now. You're good to go, he said. And not only that, look at verse 4. I will go down with you to Egypt. And I will also surely bring you up again, and Joseph will close your eyes. There's something going on here. He's already told him he will make him a great nation there out of about 70 people that came from Jacob at this point in time. I will go down with you. How do you read that? I will go down with you. Does God need to go somewhere? Huh? Is God omnipresent?
Yeah.
So what do you think he's implying?
He's just assuring him that he would be with him.
He's assuring him that he'll be with him.
That's right.
And making it personal. I think he's making this very personal. I will go with you. He's already there. He's everywhere. But I will go with you. And he's going to do something else. I will also surely bring you up again. Now, did he bring him up again?
Yeah, he did.
How did he bring Jacob up again?
Bones.
His bones. His bones. He'd been, what is it, embalmed, right?
Yeah.
But you think the you here could be used in a dual sense? You think this could be used in a dual sense? I will bring you up again.
Resurrection.
Yeah.
All of you.
Resurrection, yes, but also could it be used for the nation of Israel?
That's what I said. Mm-hmm.
Because Jacob's name seemed to be used interchangeably here. So that's just my thinking here. That it may have meant that I will bring you up, even though you will be, your eyes will be closed. And at the same time, I will bring the nation that I will make of you there up again.
Milt?
Yes.
You know, God had told Abraham they'd be in Egypt 400 years. So I wonder how that played into.
You're stealing my thunder. You're stealing my thunder. No.
She said you're not getting too equipped.
I know it. Yeah, you're exactly right. Since you mentioned that, let's go to Genesis chapter 15. Let's go to Genesis chapter 15. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry.
You have to mention my pain to be relieved. Now, this is in chapter 15 here where we are. This is verse 13. God is confirming the Abrahamic covenant with Abraham or Abram. Look at verse 13. God said to Abram, "Know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs, where they will be enslaved and oppressed 400 years." Now, we didn't know at this time what that land was. Do we know now?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we do. The land is Egypt. It is Egypt now. But I will also judge the nation whom they will serve, and afterward they will come out. They, his descendants, will come out with many possessions. You see? So not only is this providing for and the nation being formed there in Egypt, but this is also fulfilling a promise that God had made to Abraham hundreds of years earlier. God is a faithful God. God will fulfill his promise to you, whether you are still alive or not. He went on to tell Abraham, go ahead and go in peace to your fathers. He is still going to fulfill this promise, whether the one to whom he specifically made it is still alive or not. God is a faithful God in that way, so he'll fulfill it. Yes, you're exactly right, Patty. And let's keep on going here. Verse 5. Now, Jacob has assurance now that it's okay to move to Egypt. Notice verse 5. Then Jacob arose from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel carried their father Jacob and their little ones and their wives in the wagons which Jacob has sent to carry him. So it seems like he's moving with haste now. Everything is fine, so I can go on and take this journey, even though Egypt is not the land of promise. They took their livestock and their property, which they had acquired in the land of Canaan, verse 6, and carried to Egypt, Jacob and all his descendants with him. But if you notice verse 20 in chapter 45, notice what Pharaoh had said to Joseph. Do not concern yourselves with your goods, for the best of all the land of Egypt is yours. So he didn't even have to load up with all of his possessions. He was still going to be well taken care of, but he loaded them up. Took him anyway. Verse 7, his sons and his grandsons with him, the daughters and his granddaughters, and all his descendants he brought with him to Egypt. All his descendants, all his seed, all those who came directly from Jacob. That's the number that's going to be counted here. Now, I'm going to count this, and then Roman numeral 3 says the identity of all of Jacob's seed or descendants at the time of his relocation to Egypt. And this takes most of the chapter, verses 8 through 23. Now I want to point something out here. The narrator here, Moses, is actually identifying these by their mothers.
Yeah.
You may have noticed that.
Yeah.
There's four mothers involved here. There's Leah, Rachel, Bilhah, and Zilpah.
Right.
So let's go through this, and we'll go through this quickly. Now, verse 8, these are the names of the sons of Israel, Jacob and his sons, who went to Egypt. Reuben, Jacob's firstborn. The sons of Reuben, Hanok, and Palu, and Herzon, and Carmi. The sons of Simeon, Jemuel, and Jamin, and Ohad, and Jachin, and Zohar. Shaul, the son of a Canaanite woman. The sons of Levi, Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. Verse 12, the sons of Judah, and Onan, and Shelah, and Perez, and Zerah. But not, notice the parenthetical statement here. But and Onan died in the land of Canaan. Y'all remember them?
Mm-hmm.
Remember when that happened? Yes, they died because they did something evil in the sight of the Lord, and he killed them. And the sons of Perez, and Herzon, and Hamul. Verse 13, the sons of Issachar, Tola, and Puva, and Eob, and Shimron. The sons of Zebulun, Sarid, and Elon, and Jaleel. Now notice verse 15. These are the sons of Leah, whom she bore to Jacob in Paddan Aram with his daughter Dinah. We remember all those.
Yes.
All his sons and his daughters numbered 33. So 33 of Jacob's descendants came through Leah.
Yeah.
33. Okay. So now let's go on. Verse 16, the sons of Gad, Ziphion, and Haggi, Shuni, and Esbon, Eri, and Arodi, and Areli. The sons of Asher, Imnah, and Ishva, and Ishvi, and Beriah, and their sister, Sirah. And the sons of Beriah, Heber, and Malkiel. Now notice verse 18. These are the sons of Zilpah. Do you remember who Zilpah was? One of the maids, right? Whom Laban gave to his daughter Leah, and she bore Jacob these 16 persons. So how many do we have so far? 33? 49. 49 plus 16, 49. All right, now let's go on. Verse 19, the sons of Jacob's wife, Rachel, Joseph and Benjamin. Now to Joseph in the land of Egypt were born Manasseh and Ephraim. I think we read about them a little bit earlier. Whom Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bore to him. To the sons of Benjamin, now listen to this. Verse 21, to the sons of Benjamin, Bela and Becher and Ashbel, Gera and Naaman, Ehi and Rosh. I love these two next. Muppin and Huppin. These must have been twins. These may have been twins. Muppin and Huppin. And Ard. These are the sons of Rachel who were born to Jacob. There were 14 persons in all. But you notice how many descendants Benjamin had?
Yeah.
10. And he was the lad.
He's the lad.
He's the lad. So he may have been a little bit older than the lad. So this is a total of how many?
Maybe 63.
This was how many here for him?
14.
So 14. 9 plus 4 is 13. 4 plus 1 is 6. So 63. Now, let's go to verse 23. The sons of Dan, Hushim. The sons of Naphtali, Jaziel, and Guni, and Jezer, and Shiloh. These are the sons of Bilhah. This must be Rachel's maid, whom Laban gave to his daughter Rachel, and she bore these to Jacob, 7 persons. 7 persons. So how many is this?
Seven.
17?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, who's missing? Who's missing?
Levi.
Two died, so minus two, remember? Who's those two? Two sons of Judah. Who's their names?
Er and Onan.
Which ones?
12.
Verse 12, okay. So, Er and Onan.
Yeah.
So we subtract those. That leaves 68. Who else do we subtract?
Joseph.
And who else?
His two sons.
Benjamin.
Jacob. Do we subtract Jacob? That makes 66. Mm-hmm. Now, what do we have to do? Let's go to the second part of this. That's 66. And that's what it says in the end of verse 26. It says, all the persons belonging to Jacob who came to Egypt, his direct descendants, not including his wife, the wives of Jacob's sons, were 66 persons. And the sons of Joseph who were born to him in Egypt were 2. All the persons of the house of Jacob who came to Egypt were 70. Is that what you got?
Yep.
So 70 persons. Because Joseph was already down there. His two sons were already down there. And then Jacob is not being counted in any of this until now.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's who came there. God is going to make a great nation out of this. There's 70 people.
I think you're not including Joseph's wife in that 70?
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
Oh, this seems to include the descendants.
Persons of the house of Jacob. That sounds like Jacob, but the house of Jacob.
Exactly.
I
saw that also. But I think in this case, he's referring to those who came out of Jacob's, who came from Jacob, through these different people and so on, extended on down to maybe even great-grandsons.
Yeah.
And the seed there.
Because even Leah and Rachel are not covered.
Yeah. So this is absolutely amazing to think about, that God is going to make a great nation out of them. This family right here. This number. And they're all accounted for. It's absolutely amazing what God is going to do in, if you will, a foreign land. Let's ask this question at this point. Did Jacob possess Canaan yet?
No.
He had not possessed Canaan.
No.
But later on, he'll never possess it, but his descendants will. Now let's look at verse 28.
Also, the other thing built in verse 4, where God speaks to Jacob, he actually tells him that he will die there, because it ends with that Joseph will close your eyes.
Yeah. And that is very comforting. I didn't mention anything there, because that's the custom of the Jews for the most part now.
Yeah.
And they would close his eyes. How did Jacob think that he was going to die before all this? Alone, without Joseph. Now, what comfort, what encouragement, that he will be able to live for 17 more years with his son that he loved, Joseph. And when he dies, and he did die, he will not die alone. Joseph will be with him, and Joseph will close his eyes. And also, he made Joseph to, also, I don't want to swear to him, but he made him to confirm the fact that he would bury him in Canaan. He was still going to be buried in Canaan. So let's finish this up now. Jacob, verse 4, Jacob chose Judah to lead the caravan to his household and all his livestock and possessions to Goshen in Egypt. This is verses 26 through 34. Now it's really interesting here how Judah now has become the leader of the sons in this regard. And Jacob actually chose him to lead the caravan to Goshen. Who was the one whose idea it was to sell Joseph to Egypt in the first place?
Judah.
It's amazing what God can do to someone. It's amazing what God can do. So don't write people off.
Well, he was a natural-born leader.
Don't write them off. So Jacob and all of his household arrived in Goshen. Look at verse 26. All the persons belonging to Jacob who came to Egypt, his direct descendants, I think this is what he's referring to, his direct descendants, not including the wives of Jacob's sons, were 66, we were already there, and the sons of Joseph, who were born to him in Egypt, were 2, and so on. Now let's look at verse 28. Now he sent Judah before them, so we already established that. So Judah is the leader of the caravan. Now notice verse 29. So they're now in Goshen. Goshen is, I think, in the northeastern part of Egypt. Very fertile, near the Nile. Good land for raising animals and so forth, crops, so on. It's the fat of the land. It's the best of the land. It's amazing what God has done. Joseph prepared the chariot, his chariot, verse 29, and went to Goshen to meet his father. As soon as he appeared to him, he fell on his neck and wept on his neck a long time. This is absolutely something. Think about this. Joseph is so excited at this point. His family is now in Goshen, which is near, apparently near where he is, but not in the same area. This is a separate area, but it's still part of Egypt. He's in Goshen, the family now, and Joseph doesn't wait, it seems here from this verse, to have his servants to prepare his chariot to go. He is so excited about seeing his father and meeting with him again, reuniting with him again, he prepares his chariot to do it. He rejoices over him. He wept on his neck for a long time. This is absolutely amazing. For Jacob to think that his son Joseph had been dead for 22 years, and now they're reunited again. Then Israel, verse 30, said to Joseph, "Now let me die, since I have seen your face, that you are still alive." Do you think Jacob really wanted to die at this point?
No.
What do you think was being going on here? What do you think had happened to Jacob at this point now? Now he's reunited with his son, favorite son.
He feels complete.
He feels complete. He feels complete. His life is now complete. His life is now fulfilled. His life
is peace.
He'll die in peace. He will die in peace. Joseph would close his eyes. This is an amazing story, how God can orchestrate things. Never give up on God. Never give up on God. No matter how hopeless and lost it might appear to us, God can work it out for the good of all involved that belong to him and his own glory. Verse 31, Joseph said to his brothers and to his father's household, Joseph is now preparing them, especially the sons, to meet Pharaoh and how they should respond to him. Let me read that. Joseph, verse 31, said to his brothers and to his father's household, I will go up and tell Pharaoh and say to him, my brothers and my father's household who were in the land of Canaan have come to me. Have come where? Did he say Goshen? Did he say Egypt? Who have they come to? To me. Joseph is taking this very personal. They've come to him. They didn't just come to a place somewhere. And the men are shepherds. This is what Joseph wants these men to tell Pharaoh. And the men are shepherds, and they have been keepers of livestock, and they have brought their flock and their herds and all that they have. Now Pharaoh, verse 33, calls you. Now when Pharaoh calls you and says, what is your occupation? You shall say, your servants have been keepers of livestock from our youth even until now, both we and our fathers, that you may live in the land of Goshen. For every shepherd is loathsome or detestable or abominable to the Egyptians. So Joseph is preparing his brothers how to interact with Pharaoh when he asks them questions. What is he saying? Tell them the truth.
Yeah.
Tell them the truth. That this is what you are, and this is what you've always been, and this is what you are now, and this is what you will be.
You know, I think part of the plan, God's plan, is to keep them separate from Egypt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Joseph's just fulfilling that with the shepherd part of it.
Exactly right. It's amazing how they could be in a land, but separate from the people in the land. This is excellent. God orchestrated all of this. So now, there are many things that we can learn from this. But there's one thing that I focused on in this, was God's faithfulness. I said, what can we learn from this? Well, there are possibly many lessons, but I want to highlight one. It has to do with the faithfulness of God. As you are going through life, no matter what is happening to you, you need to keep in mind that God is a faithful God. What does it mean that God is faithful? It means that God will fulfill or perform all his promises. That is, he will not fail in a single one of them. He is always true to his word. That means that he can be fully trusted. You can stake your eternity on his promises. And we look back at what the promise that God made to Abraham in Genesis 15, we read the verses already, that they will be in a land that is not theirs. They'll be in a land that is not theirs and be enslaved for 400 years, but God will bring them out. Now, we're not going to go through the book of Exodus, but the book of Exodus is about God bringing them out, and he actually brought them out of there. And in Philippians 1:6, so let's turn to Philippians 1:6. This is becoming one of my favorite verses now. Philippians 1:6. This is a promise to us. Now, that was to Abraham and to his descendants. But now let's look at us from the New Testament perspective and our salvation. Notice what Paul says here. Philippians chapter 1, verse 6. So we can take this, we can claim this. He says, verse 6, "For I am confident of this very thing, that he who began a good work in you will perfect it until the day of Christ Jesus." Who began the good work? God did. Is he going to stop? Huh? Is his ability going to not be able to completely carry it through? Absolutely not. He says, the one who began it is the one who will perfect it. Perfect means to bring it to fulfillment, to bring it to completion, until the day of Christ Jesus. Which means we need to be looking for Christ. There's one more verse I wanted to just read here as well. First Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 24. Just turn over there briefly for a moment. First Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 34. First Thessalonians chapter 5.
Verse what?
34. I'm sorry, 24. That's not 34, verse 24. Verse 24, sorry. I can confuse anyone, right? 24. 24, yeah. There's not 34. First Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 24. Notice what he says. Faithful is he who calls you. Who is the one who calls us? God is. And he will also, what? Bring it to pass. This verse literally says, faithful the caller. Because that's what the emphasis is on, the one who calls. Faithful the caller, and he will also do it. God will do it. God will bring about. God will bring it to pass. We can have the utmost confidence that whatever God has promised us he will do, he will do. Because God cannot deny himself. Faithfulness is a part of God's character. If God is not is being unfaithful, he's denying himself, which he cannot do. So let's take great confidence in our God. Let's pray. Father, we're so thankful to be here today. We're so thankful for your word. We're so thankful for the book of Genesis and all that you have taught us and all that you're teaching us and will continue to teach us through it. Give us ears to hear, hearts to understand, and a willingness to obey, that we may be more and more conformed to the image of your Son, our Lord Jesus Christ. And we pray this in his name.